God, yeah, your breathing sounds really low. Anyway, so once again,
that's really weird.
Okay.
Hi, this is Erin, and welcome to Everything EFL, a podcast about language teaching. I'm not an expert on the subjects I choose to talk about, but I've been around and I know some stuff. Credit will be given where possible, in the episode or in the show notes.
So once again, I have the lovely, the fabulous Radhika Iyer with me. She joined me in episode 34, where she talked about native speakerism. So if you haven't listened to that one, go back and just have a little listen there. Hi, Radhika. How are you?
Hi, Erin. I'm good. Thanks. Thank you for having me on again. Yeah, so it's really nice to be asked again. Yeah.
Why have I brought you on, Radhika?
I think you've brought me on because you want me to talk about critical thinking. And I've done a lot of work with critical thinking for the last, I would say, 10 years or so. Yeah, I started about 10 years ago, I would say, when I kind of critical thinking fell into my lap and I had to, you know, do some work with it and do some training for it as well. So that's where I started. And since then, I've used mostly critical thinking in terms of for my teacher training work. And then I've tried and used some of it in my ESL, EFL and EAP, English for Academic Purposes classes as well. Yeah.
And I know as much as the next person. So that's why I thought I'd bring you on. You definitely know more than me. So now we had a chat about this and you told me that a lot of the definitions of critical thinking are really academic and quite sort of long-winded. But can you do a sort of in a nutshell definition of what you think critical thinking is, especially in terms of the EFL classroom?
Well, most definitions would actually say that it's and this is where I think people don't realize that it's an intellectually disciplined process, and it actually involves a lot of active thinking, which involves the skills. And I'm going to mention one or two because I know you're going to mention the rest later. So analyze, examine, reason, inquire, discover, using those skills as a guide to belief and action based on your observation, your experience, your communication. To kind of understand it based on my work is really, so it's really thinking about thinking, you know. So it's actually a very disciplined process. And that's actually very, very difficult. You know, so that's what it actually is, thinking about thinking, and it's a disciplined process. So I hope that kind of puts it into a brief nutshell kind of thing.
Yeah, I think for the purposes of the classroom, we don't really need to get much deeper than that. But, you know, what you're saying is it goes beyond just sort of memorizing vocabulary and learning grammar rules. Mm. We're actually engaging our brain in some way to, for example, solve problems or make inferences, explain yourself, interpret things. There were a couple on the list that I found that I would like your opinion on. What do you think it means by self-regulation? That one came up on the list.
Yeah, self-regulation, and it comes up a lot. And I think because there are so many, because critical thinking was something that kind of boomed in the late 90s and early 2000s in education, and then everybody jumped on the bandwagon, you know. And so it really means reflecting. So really thinking about the way you're learning, you know, and regulating yourself. So you're regulating your learning, setting your own goals, identifying your targets, reflecting on the process of learning, seeing how you're learning and seeing what you need to do differently or how you need to learn differently. So that's why it's very disciplined process. And so for me, self-regulation would be something like reflection, you know, a reflective process of thinking and learning, well, thinking about your learning, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. I try to do this with my students every sort of few weeks. We'll have a little reflection. How do you think you're doing? How could I improve? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? Am I afraid of speaking? Why am I afraid of speaking? What can I do to overcome that? Mm-hmm. So it's quite an easy way to insert that into your EFL lesson, isn't it? If you're looking at goals, aims, and, you know, asking your students to think about how they're learning, what they're learning, and what they can improve on.
I don't know how easy reflection is. I've actually always kind of struggled with it, you know. I find that every time, I mean, sometimes I've succeeded, but whenever I've asked learners, like, you know, and I would get them to think about how have they improved in a particular skill, or what do they need to improve, and what have they been doing to try and get there, what works, what does not work. And actually, a lot of the time I've been met with complete silence, you know.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, I've found that. And sometimes I even have to give like a list of questions or some sort of table or list for them to just kind of, and I have to give them that space. But still, I would find that maybe quarter of the class might respond. The rest of them would still be silent, because I think thinking about the way you learn is actually quite a difficult thing to do. And if you come from an educational background where you've mostly been doing rote learning, or you've been told to be quiet in class and listen to the teacher, it's quite a big thing, you know, to suddenly be thrown into. So reflective learning is a very good thing, but I think it requires a lot of practice.
But then that does lead to the point, like you say, some cultures, they don't use critical thinking at all. They're not trained to question anything. Therefore, to turn that in on yourself, I think it's extremely difficult to be introspective and to look at yourself and go, oh, maybe I need to do this and maybe I need to do that. And then on top of that, you know, you could disagree with me here.
If your education experience has been going to school, sitting down, listening to the teacher, completing your homework, go home and study, do well in exams, you know, and you have been successful, and that is seen as achieving in education, and then suddenly you're being asked to, you know, say, okay, how could you have done this better? What worked for you? You know, sometimes like I would try a new game or a new activity in class, and then I would just ask them, you know, I would use that in reflective process, say, okay, why did you like it? Is there anything you didn't like? And justify, talk about it first with in pairs, and then, you know, come and tell me. But even then, like, they were so reluctant to tell me, like, oh, okay, I actually didn't like this activity, or I didn't feel that I, you know, learned from this activity. Yeah.
But then I think, again, that comes down to they're taught that the teacher is the be all and end all.
Always right, yeah.
The font of all knowledge. They you know, can you imagine how difficult that is for them to question that or go, oh, well, actually, I didn't like that. That's a really tough thing for them to do. And then going back to my point about turning it in on yourself and being reflective and introspective, it also means that, let's say they go, oh yeah, I don't think I am practicing my speaking enough. Then in turn, that means they have to take ownership of that.
Clear.
And then the responsibility is on them to do something about it. And for some students, that's quite too daunting. If you're asking them to do something outside the class, take responsibility for learning, you know, join a club, have a conversation with someone, stop hanging around with your own nationality. It's just too scary for some students.
Yeah.
It's stepping outside their comfort zone, and they don't like it.
Yeah, so, because reflection or self-regulation means also self-evaluation. And I think that's very difficult. And I think people need to be trained or taught how to do that. And they need to practice it a few times.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Before they're comfortable and they can find their way through it, kind of thing.
And you're never going to succeed with every student, because, as you know, we've had students in our old job from a certain culture, and, you know, they come in and they're so culture shocked that you never crack that exterior, you never get through to them, you know.
It is
hit and miss, but I think it's definitely, reflection exercises are definitely valuable, because at least some students will get something out of it, I think. Do you agree? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I never gave up. I would always try it, you know, and I always tried in a different way. So, you know, got to just keep plodding on with it, you know. And sometimes you'll see little glimpses of, you know, success, and you think, okay, all right, you know. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's great when they go, teacher, I joined a club, or, you know, you're like, yay, finally. because as we know, there's only a very certain amount of learning that goes on in the classroom as well. You know, most of it does and should take place outside the classroom, and I think that's where a lot of students fail, but that's another podcast, I feel. Stick to the program, Erin. And the other one that I really like also is open-mindedness, which I think really lends itself to EFL classrooms, especially even if you're in a monolingual class, you know, you've got an opportunity to examine other cultures and countries through English. And if you're in a mixed nationality class, again, brilliant. You know, there are so many activities and ways to find common ground and talk about different things where you can achieve that open-mindedness.
That is interesting that you said open-mindedness, because a lot of critical thinking when it first started was kind of couched in Bloom's taxonomy. If you're familiar with Bloom's taxonomy, you know, the pyramid, there's a pyramid, you know, so, and that pyramid has changed a few times. It's been updated and updated. So, you know, it starts with memory and understanding, comprehension, application, and then it goes to the top. So you have lower order thinking skills. Not necessarily that lower order thinking skills are bad. They're also necessary, you know, but, and that's changed because it used to be the highest order thinking skill used to be synthesis. In the last few years, it's changed to creativity, you know. So I think that's where it's important when we are using it in language teaching that we try and give opportunities for our learners to be creative with the language.
Yes.
And I think that's where it kind of hits a problem because as teachers, we are aiming for accuracy and we want to steer them towards accuracy, especially if you're teaching an exam class or something. And then at the same time, you want them to be able to be creative and explore and play with the words or, you know, try new things, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's where I think open-mindedness, it's interesting because I think we have to set up an ethos in the classroom where everyone is open-minded and you as a teacher is, you know, is also open-minded. And I think that's quite challenging as well. Yeah.
It can be. It definitely can be. I mean, it really depends on the dynamic of your class.
Yeah.
Like you say that that's your job, find those activities to create common ground and make everybody realize that you're not as different as you think, you know, lots of collaborative activities and things like that get people working together. Lovely. Okay, so the stage is yours, Radhika. You are going to give us some critical thinking activities based on the different skills, aren't you? Now, you did say to me that generally speaking, it's easier to do critical thinking activities from B1 and up. So we'll talk about that. And then after that, I'm going to chat about a few lower level activities that I found online. So,
I would say it is more realistic to do it because really, to be able to think critically about something, you need knowledge. We can't expect people to think critically if they don't have the knowledge base. And so in terms of a language class, knowledge here means having enough language to be able to think critically. How can you think critically about something? Let's say we give them a situation or whatever, but if they don't have enough language for it, they can't think critically. It's going to be really hard for them to do that. Maybe they can think critically in their own language, but then they're going to have difficulty expressing that then if they don't have enough language for it. And that's why I say that it's a little bit more realistic and it makes life a little bit easier for you as a teacher if you are with a higher level with B1 and up. Not that you can't do it with lower levels. I have done certain things. More sort of, when you want to go higher up into the higher challenging activities and more creative activities, you realize that they would need knowledge. Here, knowledge equals language. And so it would be a bit more suitable, you know, for B1 plus B2, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. So what skill would you like to do first?
Well, I'll talk about reading first. And I think, and it's quite interesting because a lot of our course books would have some of these activities, like you might show them the headline or the title and get them to guess the content. So you don't give them the text first, you give them the headline or the content, or you do it the other way. You give them a paragraph, ask them to guess what else is going to happen or what they think it's about. Where do you think you might find such a text? You know, is it from a storybook? Is it from a newspaper? Is it from a website? Is it from a nonfiction book? So that kind of brings in a bit of critical thinking because they are not just reading the text and answering comprehension questions. They think a little bit about the context of, you know, where would you usually find such texts, you know? Or sometimes we might give them something and ask them to think of a title or whatever. And sometimes one of the interesting things which I've done with slightly higher level learners is that I've given them a headline or a title. And then I've asked them to write some questions about what do they want to find out now about the text. So they write questions, you know. So are there people in it? You know, where is it set? You know, so again, you have to guide them. I might give them a couple of questions. I might give them one or two questions that you would ask about a text before you actually read the text, you know. So it kind of brings out a little bit of creativity. It puts it into a wider context than the reading. And it, and then it's interesting for them when they actually read it to yeah. see whether the questions that they asked were answered or whether they were relevant or whether they were completely off tangent. And it doesn't matter if they were completely off, because then they were being creative with their questions.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really engaging way of getting students into the reading as well, because in fact, a lot of the time students kind of go, oh, when they know they're going to read a big long text. So it's a good way of getting them interested in it. The other thing I was thinking of is, could you adapt this activity for lower levels by, rather than just saying, what do you think this is about? You could ask them, what do you think this is about? And then give them maybe three options just to give them a little bit of help.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Another activity that I've tried, and this can be done with lower levels, is just you give them a small paragraph and it's completely grammatically correct, but there's lots of contradictions in it. So, for example, you might say, John is a butcher who runs a bakery shop. He sells apples, you know, so it's grammatically correct, you know. And so then they just read it. And because it's simple, they just pick out all the contradictions there. And then you ask them, why? Why is that a contradiction? You know, they said, oh, yeah, butcher. You know, why suddenly bakery and why apples and things like that? And then what you do is you get them to think of alternative vocabulary that they could use to make it more sensible, you know.
Oh, that's lovely.
So, yeah, so it's kind of interesting because you can show them that it can read very well, you know, it's absolutely fantastic, but then there are actually little contradictions there, you know. So, and then you can get them to change some of the words to what they think would be more suitable vocabulary. So that is something that can be done with lower level and higher level. With lower level, you would have less contradictions or simpler words that they can detect. With higher level, you can go with a longer text and with more kind of subtle contradictions, you know, that are not so obvious kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, that's really that. Nice. I really like that, because I think also, like, it's very easy to get caught up in accuracy when you're teaching, but you know, you're focusing on coherence rather than cohesion here. So that's really nice.
Yeah. And then with higher levels, what you can do is, as an extended task, they can write their own contradictory text. You know, they write it in pairs and they exchange it with other groups. And then they have great fun finding, you know, another person's contradictions and see whether they found everything or not, you know. And it's really nice because then they talk about it and they say, but that's not a contradiction, it's possible, and things like that, you know. So it's really nice. It's really a fun thing to do. And even with lower levels, sometimes I might give them a small paragraph and just take out some adjectives. So I might decide what, so just take out adjectives and then decide, like, get them to think, okay, what word goes in there? It's an adjective. What kind of adjective, you know? Would it be color? Would it be size? Would it be a comparative? Would it be a superlative based on the sentence? So they get to think about it a little bit, you know? So,
yeah, I like that. And also, like, if you're stuck for material, you could use the transcripts from your listening in the back of the book.
Yeah.
You've got a ready-made script, and all you have to do is blow it up and tip X out those words. And I think that's really good because it gives them that second and third exposure to the same text, which is invaluable, I think, when learning.
Exactly. And that's what I tell teachers. You don't have to go and look for new stuff. Just use what's already in the course book. Change it slightly. That's all. And even with your comprehension questions, you would notice they would start with, you know, simple comprehension questions. Then towards the end, the last two questions would be more kind of open-ended questions, asking for your opinion. And I just tell them, change the order. Change the order of the questions. Ask the open-ended questions first. Why do we have to ask factual questions first and then go to open-ended ones? Don't depart from the book. Use the book, but just tweak things a little bit, especially with busy teachers. It just requires a little bit of tweaking. That's it. Yeah.
Lovely.
Okay.
What's next? Can't wait to hear
what's
this.
What's next? So next I will go to writing.
Okay.
Now, writing is actually, it gives a lot of opportunities for critical thinking. And have you ever tried Dictogloss?
Yes.
Yeah, so Dictogloss is a very nice critical thinking exercise that involves listening and writing and speaking if they want. So you would, first of all, you do a little bit of dictation, or, you know, you can use an audio, whatever. So first time they just listen, they're not allowed to write down anything. Second time you can tell them, okay, now with higher level students, you can say, make some notes. With lower level students, I might say, okay, write down just some of the past tense forms you can hear or the adjectives you hear. It depends what you're focusing on, you know, what you want them to produce. Then, so you might give them according to their level. You might give them 2 or 3 or 4 times listening to the text. And then what you do is you put them into groups and you ask them to reconstruct that text using, you know, so if it's a lower level, you might give them more guidelines what to listen to. Higher level, you might just say, take notes, you know, and then reconstruct. And the idea is you tell them, it's not about how close you are to the original, but how creative you can be. And you get some fantastic results with that, you know. And it's interesting because then they will reconstruct the text. And then they always want to try and make it as close as possible to the original. But then what they then realize is some of their versions would be much more interesting and much more fascinating than the original.
Yeah.
You know, because they would add other things to it. And sometimes they would change things, you know. And it's quite interesting then that they do it. And I get them to do it in groups. I get them to write it in color on A3 paper and we display it around the classroom. Then everyone, the groups walk around and read other groups and they just find it interesting. You know, and I just get them to vote, okay, which is closest to the original? Which do you think is most interesting? You know, and yeah. They kind of vote and it's kind of nice to do that. So that's lovely because it kind of encompasses listening and they speak to each other, you know, and then
collaboration. Yeah.
And then they can read as well, you know.
Yeah. If you haven't done dictogloss before, it's important to note that anything that the students are listening to is at a natural speed, so you're not slowing down. It's generally at a natural speed. And one thing you could do as well, especially for any level really, is instead of asking them to write notes, you could get them to write chunks of language. So if they hear a phrase or a phrase of verb like get up or go to the pub, you could get them to write in chunks rather than just listening for individual words, because language isn't words, it's phrases as well, and this just draws students' attention to that.
So sometimes I would say noun phrases, so that might include an adjective or a noun or whatever, you know, and the article or whatever. So they kind of get chunks. And then the other things that we would do is maybe rearrange paragraphs. I'm sure you've done that where you jumble up paragraphs. So that involves reading and then rewriting, or you give them an introductory paragraph and you ask them to write one more paragraph or more, depending again on their level. Or you give them the introduction and the conclusion and the last paragraph and you ask them to write one or two paragraphs in the middle, what they think should go in the middle. So that's critical thinking, because then they're really thinking about what's this about, and they have to try and sustain the language, the tense, you know, some of the vocabulary used, and it really kind of engages them. It allows them to be creative, but then at the same time they're kind of analyzing a text and then trying to fit in the way they write with what's already been given to them, you know. So that's kind of good for writing as well. Or sometimes just kind of, you know, finishing a story or, you know, things like that, you know, coming up with an ending, anything like that would involve critical thinking.
Yeah, there's one activity, I think I've mentioned it before in a previous podcast, but it's kind of like a cohesion critical thinking activity where you would get students in groups of, say, 3, no more than 3, and you get bits of flip chart paper on the wall. You put them in groups. You give them a topic to write about. You give them 10 minutes or so to write the introduction. And then after the 10 minutes, you get them to move to the next piece of flip chart paper. So they're moving to a different group's piece of paper. They read that group's introduction and then they continue the essay. You give them, say, 10 minutes and then they move again to the next one. So that's
so
a really good.
They keep writing. So they keep continuing. Someone else's piece. So now that one would be better with a higher level, because it's
absolutely
quite challenging as well, you know, because chain story, you know, where they, you just, keep passing the paper and they keep adding a sentence, you know, to it. And then it's so much fun then, because the rubbish or the, the illogical stuff that sometimes comes out of it, because they're just like, you know, what do I write now? And they just write something really silly, you know, but it's great fun. Everyone has a laugh then, you know, with it. So that works very well as well. So writing actually, I would say, is offers a lot of opportunities for critical thinking, because you can do a lot with it with very, very little preparation or, you know, materials and stuff like that. You know, you can just take the writing exercise in the book and just tweak it by just giving them slightly different instructions with it. And that's all you need to do. Okay, so let's move on to speaking then. And again, speaking is lots of fun as well, because you can do a lot, you know, things that we already do in class. We do debates, we do discussions, we play games like, I don't know, Desert Island or whatever, or, you know, you have to go into space and what are the 10 things that you would take and justify your choices or things, ranking exercises, what's more important, what's less important. I think these are things that we already do in speaking, but I think a lot of it also is that really we need to allow learners to be creative and allow them to speak. We need to sometimes just step back from accuracy and just let them run with it. And I know sometimes we can hear errors and we want to jump in and correct them. And I know sometimes if you're being observed, they expect you to jump in and correct them maybe, you know, but the thing is to allow them the opportunity to speak and just let them run with it as much as possible. So any sort of games that allow, you know, a lot of speaking activities.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that as well, just letting them speak and then maybe doing a delayed error correction activity where you can address certain errors at the end. I like to do things like, there are so many sort of pictures with statements and memes online now, or little videos that really, you know, encourage you to think about certain things. Mm. I don't know if you know the work of Steve Kutz. He's an artist and he's done a few famous, you'd probably recognize a couple of his videos if you saw them. And in fact, I'm definitely going to do an episode on his work at some point. But again, it just encourages you to think about society, why things are the way they are, who has the power, and that kind of thing, consumerism and all of those kinds of things. So I'm a big fan of using those kinds of materials as well for speaking.
Yeah, one of the things that I've tried, but I've only tried it now with quite high level classes with B2, actually, I do an activity where I give them no instructions. So they have to talk to each other and figure out what to do. You know, so it's basically called Baker Street, and it's a strip of sentence. So it's got, I'll just write sentences. So it's actually a neighborhood, you know. So, you know, the person living in number 10, you know, likes to drink wine, you know, the person who lives two doors from number 10. So you give this very kind of cryptic sentence, and you give one sentence or depending two sentences to each person. So I just give the sentences. I just go and sit down, and then they look at me and I said, figure it out. But it takes a lot of courage, because sometimes it takes ages for them, you know. And then the thing is, first they just sit there and look at the sentence, you know, and they're looking at me because they always depend on the teacher to give instructions. And then eventually they realize, maybe if I just look at my neighbor's sentence, you know, and sometimes they'll ask you, can I look at, you know, and I just look at them. I just look, and it takes a lot of, I just look at them and I just say, you know, I just shrug my shoulders.
I love that.
And then they realize, they look at each other and they say, ah, look. And then they have to put the neighborhood in order from number one to number 10 or whatever, you know. So then they figure it out, you know, the relationships or the descriptions and things. And it could take 10 minutes. Sometimes it could take half an hour, you know. Yeah. So you have to be ready for that. And that's where you have to be open-minded as a teacher, you know, and you have to just let it happen, you know. So what I do when I'm doing that activity is I always have a backup in case they do it very fast, so that I'm not staring at them thinking, what do I do next? So I always have something else to move on to. If not, let them take as much time as they want, you know. Yeah,
I can imagine, like in some classes, they might even come up with a completely different idea. And go, okay, maybe the teacher wants us to assume roles and mingle and like we're in a cocktail party or something.
Whatever. Yeah. Brilliant. Whatever. Yeah. So it's just what they, you know, just each gets a sentence and then see what they do with it. What do they do with it? And to do that, and it's very interesting because you get to see who has leadership qualities and who starts the process of, come on, guys, you know. And sometimes it's quite surprising because it might not be your most active, talkative ones. It might be somebody different. And I find that very interesting because when they finish that activity, then I get them to think about it. I get them to remember, who started to talk to another person. And they have to remember who said, come, let's share our sentences. Who did this? So then they identify qualities within themselves as a class and how they work together to kind of, you know, figure it out. And that's very interesting then for critical thinking, because they are really looking into themselves then, and they're looking at their friends in a different way or their classmates in a different way, because suddenly somebody who's usually quiet or somebody who is leading the way, you know. So that's always been very interesting for me. It has always been an eye-opener or a surprise. An element of surprise is always there, the way they respond to that activity. Yeah,
I just love it. I think it's brilliant.
It's great fun, yeah. And so then listening, yeah. And you know, listening is usually comprehension questions or vocabulary. So, you know, try to change it up a bit. So sometimes get them to listen to a conversation that perhaps it's quite dramatic, you know, where people are yelling or shouting or expressing surprise, and then stop it and ask the students, like the reading, what do you think the context is? What do you think the problem is? And then they can role play and continue the conversation by themselves. And then they can listen to the original version and see how different or how similar theirs was. Another thing I do with listening is describing an activity, but taking out all the obvious words. So for example, doing laundry. So you don't use the word clothes or washing machine or laundry. You say, collect the materials, decide the setting for it, decide how long the materials are going to be in this process. So you kind of turn laundry into almost a scientific process where you use all these different words instead of using the obvious words. And then you ask them to guess, what is this process? And then they'll say, what? And they'll come up with these amazing things, really scientific things. And then, but there'll always be one or two who'll guess it and say, laundry. And then I'll say, okay, why did you say laundry? And then they look at all those words that gave them the clues. And then what are the obvious words then that should be replaced with it? So clothes, washing machine, setting, temperature, things like that, you know. Yeah. So that's really interesting. That requires a bit more work, obviously. Yeah. But
I like that. And then you could get them to do their own as well.
Get them to do their own. So then they can describe something, you know, taking out all the obvious words and getting, and then other groups can guess, and you can do it as a game or a competition. It's brilliant.
Yeah. You know? And then you could also have a bit of fun. And instead of using like a normal word like thing or materials, you could have a made up word like squimdudly or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Take out the squimdudly and turn on the squimdudly.
Yeah. It's great fun. Okay. So, so those are the four skills that I've talked about. Would you like me to talk about anything else?
Do you have anything else to talk about?
I would just like to quickly touch on grammar, because I feel that, you know, although in communicative, now a lot of the activities I've mentioned now, we have as teachers, we are aware of them. We're familiar with these activities in terms of they are communicative language teaching activities or processes. They're task-based language and all that. But when it comes to grammar, I think in a lot of course books, it is a little bit about showing them the rules, you know, and then they are doing exercises at sentence level, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel, and that's because we are moving towards accuracy. So in terms of if you want to change it a little bit, so look at reasons and not rules. And I think you might be challenging some of the processes now, but really, like, for example, if we are teaching the passive, one of the things we tell them is, oh, you know, the subject is not important in a passive form. But then for a lot of learners, the word important is a problematic. What do you mean not important? Why is it not important? You know, so, and that is where they get confused then. So it's so much better than to use a piece of text. And usually it's news pieces that use a lot of passive, you know.
Yeah.
So take a simple piece of a news extract from a website or audio or whatever. And just get them to read it first and then say, like, so this is the passive form. And there's no subject here. Why do you think this sentence has no subject? You know, so instead of telling them the subject is not important, you know, get them to think about it. So really thinking about reasons for using the passive rather than the rules for using the passive.
Yeah.
you know, because in English, there are so many exceptions to the rule, and that's where they get confused, you see. Mm. So, and again, this requires a bit of work, but then it would be, I mean, grammar teaching is supposed to be inductive, not deductive. So if you are using this process, then you are using critical thinking, and you know, you are engaging them a bit more because they're thinking of why and not just doing sentence level exercises. Yeah. Because they do sentence level exercises, then later when they go and write or when they speak, they're making mistakes then with the passive, you know, and then you're wondering why, you know. And I think because they haven't thought about why, and that's why. So, yeah. You know, more opportunities to think about why, I think.
Yeah, which know. Is why I think context is so important with grammar as yes. well. Yeah. Especially with passive, because, you know, you guarantee if you teach the passive, most of the students have already done it. They know the rules, but they haven't got a clue when to use it. So introducing when we use it yeah. and then doing yeah. activities within the contexts. So like inventions and discoveries, processes, newspaper
yes, yeah.
articles, accidents, things, bad things that have happened to you, like I was run over, you know. So introducing context is everything with grammar.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think sometimes, you know, when we are busy teachers and we become tired teachers, we tend to just go to the book and do what the book is telling us to do. You
Never.
Know? And I think some, I know, there's nothing wrong with that. But then I think that's where really a lot of the critical thinking is lacking, I think, in terms of teaching of grammar, I would say. It is challenging sometimes, but, you know, a little bit more thought or a little bit more, you know, work might actually pay off at the end.
Yeah,
know,
I don't think it's challenging as much as time consuming, and that's what puts teachers off. But I mean, I would never, ever go read the rules and do the exercises. I just think that's horrendous. So like one thing I like to do is take the information from the book, turn it into a quiz. So use the example sentences from the back of the book. So for example, if you're teaching the passive, an example sentence could be the Titanic was built in 1970, whenever it was,
Love
I don't
it,
know.
Yeah.
Need okay. to revisit that. But you could say, you know, are these sentences correct? The Titanic built in whenever it was. And you know, so you just turn it into a question and then you put them in pairs and they decide what the correct answer is. And then they look at the back of the book then and they check what they've written or what they think the answer is to the rules in the back of the book. And then you go over it together. So it's test, teach, test. Or you could do matching exercise, you know, match the rules with the sentences. Again, use the examples from that back of the book so you're not pulling sentences like out of thin air.
Yeah. Get them to do a little bit of analysis by themselves, you know, so at least, you know, some of it will stick then, you know, in terms of them producing the passive as we expect them to do later on, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the first stage of that scaffolding process, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think, the hardest part in critical thinking activities, yes, you make it fun, you make it creative, you engage them, but you need to bring that reflection into it and get them to think about it, you know, think about what they've learned and how they learned it and what was challenging for them, what was difficult, and what is it they need to learn again, maybe, to understand it better. And I think that's the process that's kind of left out, like in like a lot of activities that we do and in the books and all. Yes, they do encompass critical thinking, but we don't take it to the disciplined process about of thinking about your learning. And I think that's what we need to do then. We not all the time, but we need to bring in that little layer, you know?
Yeah. I think when you're doing your lesson planning, you know, you've got anticipated problems, pronunciation. It might be good to think, okay, can I just slip a little bit of critical thinking here? Or if I'm doing this activity, can I tweak it a little bit to make it more critical thinking-like?
Yeah. And sometimes you're just going for one thing, just a little bit of giving them an opportunity to question something, to work out something for themselves, to analyze something for themselves. You don't have to do everything all the time, you know. It can just be a tiny, tiny bit of, you know, a sliver of it, and that'll be fine, you know. And that's the thing, just trial and error and keep trying kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of teaching, you know, you try different things and some of them bomb and some of them are a great success. And, and then that gives you an opportunity to think critically yourself about your lessons. If it bombed, why did it bomb? Was it me or was it the students?
Yeah, you have to be able to think critically as a teacher before you expect your learners to do it.
Okay, fabulous. Okay. So I've got a few activities for lower levels that I found. I found them on a couple of websites, and I'll put the links at the bottom of the show notes, guys, so don't worry. Now, some of them you have already mentioned. Okay, so I think an easy thing to do with low levels is mind mapping. Yeah, so making those connections. Start with a word in the middle, and rather than just doing a spider diagram, do the spider diagram, but then make connections off of those words from the spider diagram and fill the board. It's a lovely warmer. If you've got 10 minutes, I'd say to my students, I do some examples and I say, fill the board, you've got 5 minutes, go. And you just throw some pens at them and get everyone standing up and see what they come up with.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
I think you mentioned this with your reading. You can do a lot of ordering activities. You could order lines of a simple dialogue. You could order a storyboard.
A story, yes.
And also you could do paragraphs of like a really famous story like Cinderella, something like that.
So any sort of reorder, you know, anything of rearranging or reordering is really interesting but the important thing is like, you know, it doesn't matter if some people get it wrong. It's quite interesting to see how that it can work in different ways as well. And I think that would be, you know, nice to look at as well.
And another one which I thought was really interesting was using money for a simple task, for example, and I think you can still do this with an elementary group as long as you word it correctly. So give them a budget, really useful word, and then give them a very simple question. How much can you or how much should you spend on? And then give them a list, you know, like bills, shopping, and then you can give them a little bit of language to kind of talk about it and then see what they come up with. I think that was a really nice activity.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah. I forgot to mention actually one activity that actually I've never done it since I moved to Ireland. I used to do it a lot in Malaysia when I was in secondary schools, was that because those days we used to buy newspapers every day. So I used to cut out headlines in the weekend, and I have loads of headlines then. And I just put them in groups and I give them, you know, 10 or 20 headlines each, depends, you know, each group. And I get them to arrange those headlines into a poem, you know.
I love that. That is amazing.
It's really nice. And I tell them it doesn't have to rhyme, of course, you know, but it has to have some sort of meaning, you know. And then I sometimes I offer them the option where I have some extra headlines on my table and they can come and swap out. And they're only limited how many times they can swap and things like that, you know. And it's really good then. And then we paste the headlines on a big sheet of paper and we display it. And then they go around reciting. So it's really good because they get to speak and recite poems and, you know, it's really fantastic, actually. That was something that worked so well because they're really then making connections between those phrases, you know, and trying to, make it meaningful. Some students can really do well with that, yeah.
How could we adapt that for lower levels if the language of newspaper headings is a little bit too much? What kinds of things could you use?
I don't know. I mean, I would just choose simpler headings. I mean, yeah, that's the thing, because the vocabulary in the heading can be, you know, quite challenging. But that's the thing with critical thinking. You know, you want them to make connections and you want them to be creative. I'm not sure that I would use that with a lower level.
Maybe you could try this. You could get everybody, you could give each student a strip of paper or card and get them to write a random sentence. You could narrow it down to write a sentence about yourself or something like that, and or maybe two or three sentences, and then mix those up and then distribute those out, and then they have to make some kind of poem. Would that work?
Yeah, maybe that would work. Yeah, that would work. That'll be an interesting poem. It'll turn out more like a rap, actually. Yeah.
Oh, so many things. And then there's just some real basics. And again, it does depend on language level. But again, I don't think it's necessary to produce a lot of language. As long as even if they answer you with a word, as long as you've got them down that road of critical thinking. So, you know, asking them, what do you think, for opinions, giving reasons, because, again, even if they say because noisy, they're trying to express something. Comparing and contrasting. So, you know, compare two cities you've been to on holiday, or compare London and New York. Again, it can be done in a very, very simple way. Giving examples of things, so they're not just parroting a sentence like, do you like London? Yes, I like London. Okay, give me some examples of what you like about London. So just it just avoids that parroting.
I actually have one more, which I've tried as well. So you take a basic everyday object and you get them to think about another use for it. And so like a paperclip, what else could a paperclip be used for? So they try to use their imagination. And it's nice, you can give them a couple of examples first, you know, and then maybe show them a picture of a paperclip, or show them a picture of, I don't know, something from the kitchen, and think about, you know, okay, this is used like a wooden spoon. What else could you use it for? Not just cooking, you know. Yeah. And I think that's interesting. I think that you can do with a lower level, because they just need to come up with a sentence. It could be used for something. You know? Yeah. And I think that might be quite interesting. And I've done that actually, where, you know, where they had to come up with different functions or crazy functions for everyday items, you know, and that's quite interesting as well.
That actually reminds me of an activity I did years ago. I can't remember exactly what it is, and I have to give, I think, Susie Robertson, hi Susie, credit for this. It's something like you have five things, like a piece of furniture, something from the kitchen, three other random things, and you have to design a mouse trap.
Oh, wow.
So that's quite mad. Oh, no, an animal as well. And I think you have to get students to come up with the five things before you tell them that they have to design a mousetrap. You know, they could say elephant, they could say lion, you know, what they say could lend itself very well to a mousetrap or not, you know. But it's really funny. They have to use all five objects to create this mousetrap, and it's hilarious. Yeah. Well, that's very, very funny.
That's perfect, because that's proper. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think we could probably talk all night about this, but you've come up with some brilliant ideas, and I think anyone who listens to this will walk away from this with an arsenal of really nice ideas for their class. So I just want to thank you once again, Radhika, for being a guest on my podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. I didn't think that we would talk for so long and it would be so interesting, you know?
Yeah. Me neither.
But it was great fun to actually go back and delve into all that. Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Well, I'm very grateful you did, and thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. Follow Everything EFL on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, and engage with me and my followers. If you have a suggestion, idea, or any feedback, my email is on the show notes. Finally, and most importantly, share this episode on social media and tell your colleagues. Share the love. Bye.